Welcome to Simply Save podcast from Money Control, a show where we discuss all things money. Come October 1st and your health insurance policies are all set to acquire a new look. This is because all health insurance contracts tenured after this date will have to comply with the new IRDAI guidelines and standardization. New products that were launched after October 1st, 2019 are already compliant with these norms. These norms are expected to reduce disputes between insurers and policyholders considerably. The insurance regulator issued these guidelines last year, asking insurers to standardize exclusions, that is, expenses that will not be paid for, and also definitions of certain terms, such as pre-existing diseases. Also, policies cannot be called into question after 8 continuous years of renewal, except in cases of proven frauds. Moreover, the IRDAI has also allowed insurers to cover modern forms of treatment, such as stem cell therapy and cyberknife. While these are indeed customer-friendly measures, the premiums could also go up considerably when your policy comes up for renewal. To understand the impact of these guidelines for policyholders, as also trends in COVID-19 claims and grievances, we have with us today Mahavir Chopra, an insurance industry veteran who has now launched Beshak, an independent research platform for individual policyholders. Welcome to the show, Mr. Chopra.
Thank you, Preeti, for having me here.
It's great to have you here too, sir. So these are interesting times for the health insurance sector. Now, on one hand, COVID-19 has caused considerable disruption when it comes to claim settlement especially. But on the other hand, insurers have also seen a sharp rise in demand for health insurance policies. The awareness has grown since the lockdown. And now, of course, starting October 1st, insurers and policyholders will have to adapt to a new set of regulations. The key change, of course, is around standardization of certain exclusions that IRDAI has mandated. Could you explain how this move will help policyholders and what it means for them?
Right. So you rightly said, Preeti, these are interesting times. It's a roller coaster ride for everyone, including health insurance industry. We're seeing very different kinds of claims coming in. At the same time, we're also seeing a lot of increased interest in insurance and higher sum insured insurance that people are looking for. It's basically been 20 years of privatization, right, and 16 years of standalone health insurance companies existing. And industry has grown leaps and bounds since then. And you've seen health insurance improve in terms of benefits for such a long time, right? You've seen so many new benefits coming in, a lot of changes happening because of regulation changing. At the same time, what has happened is that a lot of, because the product has changed so many times, there have also been extremely complicated exclusion wordings that every insurer has put in each of these policies that they have. What IRDA has been trying to do, and this is one of the massive efforts that IRDA has taken, is to standardize the entire definitions of exclusions, which is the biggest reason why grievances happen and complaints happen, mm-hmm. or the surprises that customers get at the times of claims. The exclusions have now been standardized. So IRDAI sat down and basically put standard definitions for each exclusion, almost 18 exclusions. They put standard definitions which every insurer, every insurance plan now has to adhere to. So every policy will have the same definition for a particular exclusion, which is a great move because health insurance has the highest number of grievances across all insurance products. Even across the consumer segments, health insurance has very, very high a number of grievances. This will result in lesser surprises for customers, lesser complaints, lesser grievances for insurers. So it's a great move.
Okay. Could you cite some examples of the kind of exclusions that will be standardized now?
Right. So from all products sold and renewed from 1st October 2020 will have standard definitions for close to 18 exclusions. Now, one of the exclusions is the 30-day waiting period, right? So
okay.
Now, if you go through policy wordings in the past, every insurer had a different wordings for 30-day waiting period. So, a couple of insurers used to put, let's say, saying that all expenses incurred in the first 30 days will be excluded. Certain insurers said all diseases diagnosed during these 30-day period would be excluded. Now, these are two very, very different things. Someone who has bought a policy and get diagnosed with something in those 30 days, for life, he will not get a cover for those treatments. versus someone who's bought a policy and for the first 30 days, if he has some expenses, those 30 days, those expenses won't be covered.
Okay.
So these were two different diverse conditions that existed in different policies. Now it's become very simple. It's only saying that all the wordings will say that only expenses incurred during the first 30 days of buying the policy for the first time will be not payable. All everything other than that would be payable. Obviously, this is related to sickness and illness. Injuries and accidents related stuff is anyways covered from day one.
Okay. The regulator has also standardized the definition of pre-existing diseases, right? Which again has been one of the chief causes of disputes.
Right.
Do you think this move will actually help reduce disputes now going forward?
Totally, totally. So what happens, Preeti, is that the earlier definition also put a lot of the discovery or the onus on the customer. So if you look at the previous definition, it used to say that pre-existing disease means any condition or ailment or injury which has any kind of sign or symptoms, whether it was diagnosed or not diagnosed, right? Whether it was received medical advice or not received medical advice, within 48 months was supposed to be pre-existing disease. So a lot of the pressure was on the customer to be able to, you know, look at all the signs and symptoms that the person had and then include that or mention that in the policy. Also, at the time of claims, insurers could check and go back and look at if there were any signs and symptoms at the time of buying the policy or 48 months before that. Now it's become very simple. Now it is saying that pre-existing disease will mean any ailment, any injury or any disease condition, which is either diagnosed by a physician 48 months prior to buying the policy, or you have got any medical advice from a doctor 48 months prior to buying the policy. In both the cases, it is linked to an event of you meeting a doctor now, right?
Mm.
It is not a symptom or a sign that you have discovered, but you've not done anything about it. That now does not get covered under pre-existing disease definition, which is an excellent thing because it makes it very clear that there has to be an event of a user or a customer going to a doctor, either getting diagnosed by a disease or get some kind of medical advice for that specific sign, symptom or ailment or injury, right? If this happens, then it is a pre-existing disease. If it doesn't happen, it's not a pre-existing disease.
Right, right. So there is greater clarity both for
the
insurer and the policyholder.
Right.
Right.
For the policyholder, it makes life very simple because, you know, while for the you are supposed to look at your life for the last 4 years, every sign or symptom is not something that you can capture, but you can definitely capture your meeting a doctor. So you would obviously have a medical file where you have all the papers, and hence it becomes very tangible for a customer to go back and look at, you know, giving answers to insurance companies vis-a-vis remembering based on, you know, relying on your memory and answering questions. So it's kind of becoming more objective than it was in the past.
Right. And the regulator has also decided that policies will be incontestable after 8 years, except of course in certain cases. So will this mean a huge relief for policyholders?
Yes, it will, because insurers were in the past cancelling policies and refunding premiums on grounds of misrepresentation, even after decades of people having a policy. Like, for example, someone who's a senior citizen who's paid premiums for even 15 years.
Right.
And let's say there is a disease that was existing at the time when the person bought the policy, but innocently or because of some oversight, let's say the child of the person who's covered under the policy missed mentioning that. Those kind of things were picked up by a certain insurer and policies were cancelled abruptly, right? And this is something which causes a lot of grievance for a customer, right? Meaning he's been investing in a policy for such a long time, and then suddenly when you need the policy, you come to know that because of some small mistake that you made 20 years ago, your policy got cancelled. Now what happens with this new moratorium clause that IRDA has brought in? Only for the first 8 years, an insurer can look back, and if they find that there is any kind of misrepresentation, then they can basically decide to either cancel the policy or put an exclusion going backwards, right? And maybe rejecting a claim.
Okay.
Only those kind of things can be done for 8 years. Beyond 8 years, only a fraud, a proper fraud, which is proven, only those claims can be rejected by looking back. Which is, what is a fraud? Fraud is when someone knowingly does something for personal gain, right? He's deceiving the insurer. He's actually fooling the insurer. That will be considered fraud. So if there is any proven fraud beyond 8 years also, insurers will be able to look back and cancel the policy or decline a claim. But if the stuff happens after 8 years and if there is some basic misrepresentation, which is more of an oversight or something that has been omitted by mistake, those kind of things which are not fraud, those insurers will not be able to look back beyond 8 years.
Okay. So, going by the current definition of pre-existing diseases, that is the one that will come into force from October 1st in existing contracts. If let's say a policyholder deliberately conceals a pre-existing disease, that will that qualify as a fraud?
Yes, it will. So deliberately doing any misrepresentation, if the insurer is able to prove that it was deliberate, then it will be considered fraud, because fraud definition, by definition, means that you are deceiving a party for your personal gain, and this will fall in that definition. If it is something which is an oversight, which a person who's bought the policy can prove, then only for the first 8 years an insurer will be able to do it, not beyond that.
Okay. The regulator has introduced a set of permanent exclusions, right? For example, cancer.
Yes. Right. So the third part, the first part has been standardization, which is basically bringing all wordings and standardizing them, right? The second has been reducing ambiguity of all these kind of things, like bringing, closing the loop on moratorium, bringing things like ambiguous wordings into check. Right? So that was ambiguity. The third is basically increasing the scope or increasing the access of the cover that is available. So, like you rightly mentioned, permanent exclusions is what you talked about. In case of permanent exclusions, what's going to happen is that in the past, it has happened a lot of times in my own experience, is that people who had cancer, people who had epilepsy, and those kind of diseases, even they were completely rejected by insurers, but the covers were declined by insurers, largely because of the kind of disease that this was. And insurers did not have the clear understanding whether they could permanently exclude such kind of diseases, because there was nothing mentioned anywhere in the regulation for an insurer to be able to do it. Certain insurers were doing it, but it was a gray area. Now, with IRDA bringing in a clear understanding of how this can be treated, what will happen is that people who have an epilepsy or people who have cancer and those kind of diseases, there's a list of diseases that can be excluded permanently by an insurer. They will have an access to policy now, because it's made very clear that an insurer can give a permanent exclusion for that disease and hence give a policy for all the remaining diseases that a person can get hospitalized for.
Okay. So it means that cancer, for example, if somebody has cancer or had cancer and has recovered subsequently, is a cancer survivor, cancer related ailments will not be covered. But if, let's say, he or she falls ill and is admitted due to an infectious disease, then that claim will be paid.
Yes.
Is that how it?
Yes. So understand it from the insurer's point of view always, right? Insurer, look at an insurer getting a proposal for someone who is a cancer survivor. In the past, it had to cover this person from the fifth year, right? If the policy said that 4 years waiting period, we had to cover, the insurer had to cover this person from the fifth year. What was happening is that insurer felt that this 4 years is not something that I can, give kind of a waiting period for someone who's a cancer patient or a person who has epilepsy or let's say has HIV. So they were completely declining covers to these people, because there was no option of permanently excluding these diseases and giving them a cover. Now, and look at it from the customer's point of view. The customer said, okay, fine, don't give me a cover for cancer, but give me a cover for remaining things, right? I'm still exposed to the other healthcare risks that exist in the world, right? So from that perspective, give me a cover for that. Now, this was not basically possible, because there was no option for an insurer to look at giving a permanent exclusion to a customer, because there was only a 4-year exclusion that was possible. Now, with this standardization, insurers will be able to give a permanent exclusion, and customers who are looking for access to health insurance, maybe even excluding the disease that they have and wanted a cover for all the other healthcare needs that they had, now can get a policy. So it's increased access for people like those.
Okay. And genetic conditions and mental health related ailments will also be now covered, right?
Right.
In
right.
all policies.
So, yes. So now what's happened is that they've completely, like I said, they've increased the scope of the cover. So they've now said that certain exclusions are disallowed. You cannot put those exclusions in a health insurance policy.
Hmm.
So some of them basically are, like you said, it's like mental illnesses now cannot be excluded in a policy, right? Things like treatments required for any complication that arises out of menopause or out of puberty cannot be excluded in a policy. Things like a person requiring treatment for his stammering, right? Those kind of things cannot be now excluded in the policy by any insurer and under any plan. So it has, all these are now, because they cannot be excluded, are covers that people can now get in the policy. So the scope of the cover, like you rightly said, is increased.
Okay. As also newer technologies and yes. forms of treatment like yes. CyberKnife and stem cell therapy, will they yes. be covered now?
Yes. So the third thing, apart from basically the exclusions that are disallowed, like I said, like we talked about mental illnesses, we talked about adult personality disorders, we talked about internal congenital diseases. These are the
right.
things that now cannot be they cannot be put as exclusions by an insurer. Second is that basically insurers can put permanent exclusions, hence giving more access to people who were earlier not getting access. The third is about giving covers for modern, more advanced treatments that are now available in hospitals, right? So, which is robotic surgery, stem cell treatments, which were earlier, depending on insurer to insurer, where some insurers covered it, some insurers excluded it. Now it's become standard. All insurers have to cover all kinds of these surgeries that have been mentioned in the IDS circular. That way.
Okay. All this is good news for policyholders, but on the flip side, it will also mean an increase in premiums, isn't it? So what kind of premium rise do you foresee in contracts that are going to come up for renewal post October 1st?
It will be very complex, given the fact that this year also we are going to see a lot of COVID claims. And what's happened is that because of the lockdown, a lot of elective surgeries did not happen. However, now, having said that, now they've started happening. I mean, people are going for elective surgeries, which I'm hearing now from hospitals and also insurance companies. You look at it, another impact of this lockdown and basically COVID-19 has been that accident claims have gone down, right? So it's been a very complex year for healthcare claims. There have been increase, obviously, of claims for pandemic, and the ticket size of these claims are way higher than a regular claim size. Elective surgeries have gone down. Accident claims have gone down. So it's going to be a complex year, plus the increase in the scope that we are talking about right now. So it's going to be a complex year. Overall, the sense is premiums definitely will rise. Insurers have to factor the things that we just spoke about, inflation, plus the fact that now the insurance policy, the policy scope has increased significantly because of all the new stuff that IIT has now mandated insurance companies to look at. Okay. So it's going to be complex, but overall, directionally, premiums definitely will rise. That's the answer to you.
Okay. Since you mentioned COVID, I was going to come to that next. So, there have been a lot of complaints around COVID-19 claims. There have been disputes between hospitals and insurers and policyholders. There have been complaints around complete claim rejections or partial settlement. One of the key causes is, of course, the customary and reasonable charges clause. Even policyholders whose policies do not have room rent sublimits have ended up sharing a substantial part of the claim burden. So, according to you, how justified are insurers in invoking this clause?
So, honestly, I've had a lot of these discussions on social media, and this is something, obviously, which is a kind of an area where the customer suffers a lot. But, when I look at it, I look at it from an ecosystem perspective, and I'm looking at insurer also as a private enterprise, right? Which is also supposed to answer, as much as it is supposed to answer a customer, it is also supposed to answer a shareholder. It's a private company, right? So in case where an insurer is getting impacted by overcharging by a hospital, or where they are not following the protocols that they are supposed to, let's say in terms of giving cashless to a customer, right? There have been so many cases where, though there is a cashless arrangement between a hospital and an insurer, when the customer actually landed to that in that hospital, the hospital denied giving cashless to the customer. So these kind of grievances, if you look at it, as much as the customer is affected, like me or you, the insurer is also affected as a payer, right? Because look at it from an insurer's point of view, they have also been caught in this as a surprise, right? Nobody knew pandemic was going to happen. Insurers did not know that it will have such kind of an impact on claims, right? In hospitals today are not have a higher negotiating capacity compared to an insurer, because hospitals typically are chosen by customers first, and then they check whether cashless is available or not, or an arrangement is available or not. So you first land in a hospital of your choice, and then you check with an insurer. So insurers don't control the person, the customer, where he goes, which hospital he goes. Hence, insurers' negotiable capacity with the hospital is not very high. And hence, what happens as an impact of all this is that hospitals are able to overcharge. Hospitals are able to say no to people who have cashless arrangements, saying that, "No, I will not give cashless." And all these things are happening. Insurer, which is a private entity, which is basically someone who is supposed to pay claims, is also supposed to protect its books and remain viable. And hence, they invoke the clause of reasonable and customary. Now, what is a reasonable and customary clause? Reasonable and customary clause says that an insurer will pay to a hospital or to the customer charges which are similar to the charges that a similar graded hospital in that similar area would charge. For example, if I'm sitting in, let's say, Delhi, and in an area where there is a hospital which is charging a room charge for a private hospital to be, let's say, 10,000 rupees, another hospital in that same area with the same grade is, let's say, charging 20,000 rupees. It is basically where you can find out, or insurer can find out, where overcharging is happening. Whatever expenses it is charging, an insurer will have to look at its own books and be viable and remain healthy by putting protection on what it can pay to a hospital, right? From that perspective, this reasonable and customary kind of a clause is implemented and is basically invoked in such kind of situation.
But can insurers say that the rates have to be the same as what the government has prescribed? Because that
So
could be for
when a
non-insured patients.
right. So for understand from a insurer's point of view, what they are trying to basically implement here is that how can standard protocols be maintained by all hospitals, and how can basically the pricing that a hospital charges, depending on the grade and the city that it belongs to, how can that be standardized, right? These are the two things that an insurer is basically harping on from almost April 2020, right? Many state governments have basically gone down this path and put standardization. So an insurer is right to say that, okay, at least implement the standardized pricing and the protocols that the local government has basically asked the hospital to implement, right? Means has been asked to adhere to, right? So an insurer will have to do that to remain viable, because understand it from a point of view of a payer. Don't look at an insurer from a point of view of it being a third party who you are not going to get impacted with. An insurer which will have to is forced to pay for the overcharging that happens from a hospital, and there is no regulation that happens, let's say, from the government. That insurer is going to turn around and hike prices next year, right? It is going to just simply hike prices next year because they have a shareholder to answer to. So who's going to get impacted in those kind of situations? Again, it is going to be the customer who's going to get impacted, right? The prices of health insurance policies will get increased if an insurer today does not basically resist paying for overcharging that is happening from the hospital's end, right? So only way to solve this problem is that government step in and put regulation on what a hospital can do. Not only put regulation, but also enforce the regulation from a point of view of ensuring that a hospital adheres with it, right? An insurer should be able to go and complain. A customer should go and complain. And that should get, you know, enforced by a by the government authorities. If this does not happen, either a customer is going to end up paying high, have deductions in their policy. If that does not happen and an insurer pays, who's your payer? In that case, the premiums will get hiked in the future years, right? In that case also, the customer is only finally going to pay. So the bottom line of this is that someone who's a third party, who's not interested in this entire arrangement, like a government who's more interested in the public interest, has to get all the stakeholders in a room and basically solve for everybody, ensuring that the general public is not impacted, which is the situation today. The general public is facing the breath of hospitals overcharging and insurers basically implementing a standardized payment to the hospital or to the customer.
So at the moment, policyholders have no choice but to shell out a certain amount from their own pockets despite having an insurance policy in place. They have to be prepared to shell out a certain amount from their pockets.
Yeah, unfortunately, if there is no government regulation in the city or state that you belong to, and it's not getting enforced, and hospitals are overcharging, insurers have protected themselves to ensure that they are not going to pay for that overcharging. And hence, it's finally coming down to the common man, the customer, who is supposed to pay. Yes, you are right. So it's going to be till no regulation is enforced by the government authorities, the problem lies with the customer. You're right. So the customer will have to ensure that they have enough emergency funds, they have enough cover to take care of these kind of deductions.
Okay. Could you highlight some other COVID-specific disputes that you've come across? For example, sanitization charges. Many hospitals are charging it separately, are adding it to the room bill separately. And and anything else that you've come across? Any such unusual disputes?
So, Preeti, this is also somehow connected with the standardization guidelines that IRDAI has brought in. IRDAI has also mentioned in this guideline that insurers are supposed to work with their network hospitals to ensure that a certain amount of the treatment cost that a hospital charges are part of the room, and certain charges that a hospital is going to charge are not supposed to be charged from a customer, right? So this is the perfect time and the perfect example that I could have given, is that how today a hospital is charging for things like sanitization, like you mentioned. It is charging for isolation. It is charging for PPE kits. It is charging for things like specialized doctors that are supposed to be isolated and kept for the COVID-19 zone that they're creating in the hospital, right? All this actually is a part of the infrastructure that the hospital is supposed to maintain, and it is supposed to be a part of the room charges, right? But it is still being charged separately by a hospital. Like sanitization is a part of what a hospital is supposed to deliver to a patient. It cannot be charged separately. But today it is being charged separately, and that's where a dispute arises between the payer, who's the insurer, and the receiver, who's the hospital right now. Apart from all this, the disputes that today are arising around cashless not being approved by insurers because the are citing liquidity issues, and they are saying that we can't wait for the time that an insurer is going to take to make a payment to them. Okay. PPE kits not being paid for, room charges having proportionate deductions, because most of the people who bought a policy, let's say 5 years ago, bought a policy, let's say for 4 lakhs, 3 lakhs, and they had a room rent limit of 3,000, 4,000. Hmm. Whereas the hospitals are today charging anywhere between 7,000 to 10,000 rupees for an isolated room. Right, and ICU charges obviously are significantly higher. So all this is resulting in 2-3 things. One is inconvenience in terms of paying first because cashless is not being accepted. Hospitals are asking for very, very high deposit amounts. Second is deductions, which are related to room charges, PPE kits, things like sanitization, like you mentioned, it is supposed to be part of the room charges if you look at it, how it used to happen before COVID times, right? All this is finally coming down to the customer, resulting in basically the customer having to pay a very high amount from its pocket, almost to the range of around 50% to 60% of the claim.
Right.
So how are insurers treating expenses on medication, given that there is no proven therapeutic drug yet?
Right. So that's a very interesting point you've raised, Sriti. And that's where I want to talk something which is maybe on behalf of the insurance industry, is that though we are an independent consumer awareness platform, we have to look at it from both points of view, right? Meaning we have to look at it from an insurance point of view and a customer's point of view. Understand it from an insurer's point of view that pre-COVID, insurers did not know that this kind of a treatment or this kind of a pandemic is going to arise, right? Most of the policies did not include or exclude a pandemic, and hence they covered pandemic. The entire treatment today, like you mentioned, is most of it is experimental treatment. There's no real treatment that has come up. So what insurers today are doing is that they are going through two things, right? One is, whatever are the medical protocols according to the Indian Medical Association that exists. Apart from that, whatever has been recommended by protocols that come from WHO and things that have been recommended by the treating doctor, right? If they fall in all these three things, which is where there is something that has been recommended by a treating doctor, and it has also been the protocol that has been published by the Indian Medical Association or by the you're talking about the ICMO and or the WHO. Both these cases, the insurer is taking a call that, okay, because these conditions are approved clinical protocols, they are paying for the medical treatment. So medicines which are forming part of these kind of protocols that have been published, and medicines which are recommended by a medical practitioner who's treating the patient, are usually covered. Meaning if they are prescribed by the medical practitioner, they are covered. So there will be no problems with these kind of expenses.
And again, coming back to reasonable and customary charges clause. This clause is not included in Corona Kavach policy verdict, right? So does that mean that policyholders are better off buying Corona Kavach policies, even if they are already covered under a regular health insurance policy?
You are right, Preeti, that visible customary charges clause is not mentioned in the Corona Kavach and Corona Raksha policies. However, having said that, I still feel that insurers will implement this clause in the policies or the claims that will happen, even if in spite of the fact that they have not mentioned it. What will get, if you have a Corona Kavach policy, what will help you is that there are no room rent charges that have been put in the policy out there. Typically, people who had a policy with room rent charges and now have a Corona Kavach policy, if they claim from a Corona Kavach policy, they will be better covered. PPE kits and all similar expenses are going to get covered in this policy. So the deductions that will happen are going to be lower compared to a regular policy that exists today that a customer holds today. Yeah. So Corona Kavach that way will help. We typically have been recommending that people who are young have a Corona Kavach policy. People who are older, let's say older than 50 and also have a disease, maybe should have both Corona Kavach and Corona Raksha, because the kind of claims that the treatment cost that can occur can be very, very high and may not be possible to get covered only by a Corona Kavach, which is limited to 5 lakhs as a cap on the sum insured.
Okay.
With that, it is a wrap of this episode of Simply Safe. If you have any suggestions or feedback, you can write to us at ncpodcast@nwetm.com. For more news, views and updates, do stay logged on to moneycontrol.com.